Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Just before we get into this week's episode, I want to just say a quick word for our sponsors, the guys over at Rob Mac. We've been working with these guys for a few months now, and they are huge rugby fans, and they are following the Lions game by game, just like every one of you. They are independent financial advisors specializing in mortgage management, financial planning, and investments. So if you need any of those services, you can check them out at robmac.co.uk. Thanks a lot to the guys at Rob Mac. Here is this week's episode. Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. I was looking it up today and we've been away for around about a month, so it's an absolute treat to be back. The Lions are on tour and for the first time in a long while, there is some Scottish interest in the summer tour. As ever, it is David, Alan and Matt here to chew over everything that's been going on in Scottish rugby over the last wee while. Matt, how are you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back. Watching the Lions at the weekend, had the honour of babysitting Alan's wee kid, and it all went quite smoothly. So feeling pretty pleased with myself, really.
And Alan, is your review of Matt's babysitting style as positive as Matt's write up?
Yeah, it is. If anything, myself and Ashley were actually quite sour that Freya wasn't more upset about us not being there for about 12 hours. Seemed to like not really give much of a shit. So, but no.
That does seem a little bit unfair.
You know, it is what it is.
Got her on the red stripe watching the Lions. You know, she was happy.
Yeah, just like her old man, eh?
More of a tisky guy myself.
Yeah, that's sort of like fairly low quality lager out of a can. That is really your brand, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, no, none of this small can. I want a big 440 can or 500 can. None of this BrewDog crap.
Well, BrewDog, once the darling, they've now fallen foul. So we can call them BrewDog crap. Right, what are we going to cover off today? Obviously, the Lions is going on. There's been a hell of a lot of news, most of it bad in Scottish rugby, so buckle in for that. But just before we get into it, a quick reminder of where you can find us. That's on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. Send us an email, thistlerugby@gmail.com, and download our newsletter or subscribe to it even on Substack, the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. We're going to have another exclusive extract from This Is Your Everest coming up next week. So an absolutely great reason to get on there and download. You can also give us a review on iTunes. We've not had one for a wee while, and Matt was feeling a little bit sad about it. So get on there, give us your five stars and tell us what you think about the show. As well as massaging Matt's ego, it does help others find the podcast and spread the Scottish rugby gospel. So that is the parish notices section of the newsletter done. Alan, I'll come to you first. How are you enjoying seeing some Scottish lads lining up for the Lions?
I mean, if we sort of put aside sort of the quality of opposition and sort of matches in general, I mean, absolutely delightful, especially for somebody sort of Hamish Watson just looks so good with his mullet and also playing absolutely amazingly, both against the Lions and then with his little cameo sort of last night against the Sharks. But no, it's feeling good and actually increasingly confident that there's going to be at least a couple in the starting 23.
Steady on there, big man. Matt, are you enjoying it as well?
Yeah, 100%. It has been nice. I think there has been gradually like a begrudging acceptance from non-Scottish voices as to how good the Scots selected actually are. And obviously, Hamish Watson has grabbed a lot of the headlines, but I think Ali Price is displaying like a completely different level of form. And is really pushing Conor Murray, who obviously hasn't really played that much. And then someone like Chris Harris, you know, has showed even more than just the sort of solidity that he's known for. And you can't really argue with someone like Doohan just like running in tries for fun. So it's been really pleasing. And I've enjoyed watching the Lions so far. I think the style they're showing is pretty enterprising. And you wonder how much Tooney's had a role in that.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been an absolute treat. And I think just on a general, it's really nice to have. I've always been a big fan of the Lions. I know we all have been, but like really to have some proper skin in the game from a Scotland perspective really is really, really pleasing. I mean, working through that group of eight, I think you touched upon most of them there, Matt, but let's start with Ali Price. Obviously, Alan Wynne-Jones goes down in the Japan game. Conor Murray's somewhat surprisingly brought in as tour captain. But you've got to say Ali Price is probably, he's played fantastically well in the two games that he's played. Is he giving Gatland something to think about? Surely, Matt, do you think he's sort of playing himself into that, probably that bench spot for the test team at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. It realistically is difficult to look beyond Conor Murray in that starting jersey. But once again, I think if Gatland seems like the kind of guy who, if the captain's not playing well and not deserving his place in the team, then he's not afraid to make the difficult decisions. You look back to the 2017 tour and you'll remember in the first test that Omani started ahead of Warburton on the bench when Warburton was obviously the tour captain. So I don't think his chances are completely out the window. It's just been really pleasing with him that he's been showing those the sort of the attacking game that he's really well known for, the snipes, and his passes look really, really sharp. But I think particularly against the Lions, the Sigma Lions, his kicking game was absolutely incredible. I thought it was interesting. Like, he put up a few of these absolutely class, right on the money box kicks that Josh Adams chased really well. And Warburton, who was commentating, I think for the first four, commented on how good the chase was without mentioning the kick. And after the sort of fifth or sixth one, he started to say, actually, the kicks are really good. We do need to pay attention to that. So once again, I think he's getting some quite nice recognition from the outside.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody else, Alan, you touched on him, Hamish Watson. You actually were talking most about his aesthetic rather than his performances, and I agree. What he's doing is like he's really rolling up his sleeves to be like, actually, my arms are fucking massive, so I'd like you to see those. But a lot of people, the big debate, him versus Tom Curry. Twitter was split. If you were English, you thought Tom Curry was amazing last night. If you're Scottish, you thought he wasn't as good as Hamish Watson. How do you analyse his start for the tour?
I think it's very difficult because ultimately Tom Curry, you know, taking off sort of Scotland fan hat, is like a fantastic player, and I actually thought played really well last night.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, Hamish Watson can only do what's within his control. And, you know, looking at the game against the Lions, I think everything that Gatland would have wanted to see from him in terms of that, especially sort of physicality, both in attack and defence, he probably did some that and more. So I don't know. I mean, it's one of the things where is there a way that Watson and Curry can both get in that starting back row? It's so difficult because it does feel like they're kind of settled on this almost kind of quasi second row slash six on the blind side, whether it's a Courtney Laws or a Tagburn. But it feels like to me a little bit like they might be the two sort of potentially sort of standout back row players on the tour.
Laws and Watson.
Watson and Curry.
Yeah. Maybe they'll try it out. Maybe not in this next match, but the one after. So I think it is something worth giving a shot. But I do think come to the test, I think you're right. I think they're going to play that hybrid role. And I think that Courtney Laws' performances so far have probably cemented that in Gatlin's mind. And even Ty Brown, when he's played, has looked really good as well.
Yeah. And it's the issue then with someone like a Watson, where if he's not in that starting team, does he get on the bench? Because ultimately there is just other players, whether it's someone like even like an Ian Henderson or even like a Faletau, who just have potentially a bit more sort of flexibility on where they could slot in that pack.
Watson at eight?
I know. I mean, to be fair, between Curry and Watson, Curry's the one who's had a lot more time at eight. And I actually think when you look at the eight options, there isn't probably what Conan's maybe the standout. I know Faletau's kind of got the pedigree, but Conan probably feels like of the first three games, he'd probably been the best performer versus sort of Faletau and Simmons.
I think if Conan has another big game, he'll start there. Because I think Faletau has that pedigree, but he's not looked at his best so far, I don't think.
How much can we draw into particularly these big physical contests from those opening fixtures, particularly the two games in South Africa, which, you know, the Lions have breezed through by 50. Like, can we really gauge much performance, particularly up front?
I think that's probably the one thing that you can gauge the most from. You know, ultimately, I think especially sort of the Sharks yesterday didn't have very much when it came to sort of fluidity in attack or, but ultimately they are big lads who can sort of who will bring a really physical game.
That
the same
is true.
Same as the Lions. So whilst, you know, ultimately they're not at the same level as like the South Africa or actually probably any of the home nations during the Six Nations, I think if anything, that's probably where their main strength lies, is in that sort of physical kind of abrasive area sort of around the ruck.
I still think they've been pretty disappointing in that respect though as well. Like, you think of Watson's try against the Lions, it was all a bit pathetic. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the sort of expansive style that the Lions have been showing so far, but they can only do that and chuck the offloads because they're getting through that first tackle or they're hitting a weak arm rather than a big shoulder. So I wonder if against harder opposition, you're able to implement that game plan whatsoever.
Well, they go again against the Sharks at the weekend due to the Bulls match being cancelled because of COVID. But continuing through the Scottish contingent, why don't we talk about Stuart Hogg, obviously brought in to captain that first game against the Lions. What have you made of his tour so far, which I suppose is literally that game?
He looked great. I mean, he was clearly absolutely buzzing to captain the side, and it was great to see him leading them out. But I think, you know, the areas that are slightly in doubt in his game are, as we've talked about loads of times before, is defense and his high balls. And it was particularly pleasing to see him take a couple of actually very difficult high balls under pressure right at the start. And that seemed to kind of settle him. And I thought his decision-making was excellent from the back. He wasn't trying to force things. He ran it when he was on, but shipped it on or put it to the boot when it wasn't. And just even that moment where he chased down the Sigma Lions player, granted it was a flanker, but managed to get back, make the tackle and get back on his feet to win the turnover. That just added to like the overall completeness of the performance. I still don't think his, perversely, just because there's so much talent and competition in the back three, his test spot is secured yet, because I think if Liam Williams has a big game where he deals a lot of high balls and is solid defensively, then I still think it is a kind of almost maybe 60-40 in Hogs' favor, but still maybe even a 50-50. So I'm hoping that another big game from Hogg, though, can tip the scales in his favor.
Hogg needed to change the narrative, though. It's all been going downhill for him over the last sort of couple of weeks with
that's true with
being on the bench for Exeter. And I think if he put in like an absolute dud of a performance, just would have sort of compounded everything. But I think now that, you know, ultimately, obviously, I'm sure this has absolutely zero impact on Gatland. But I think sort of generally the fact that he took a lot of high balls, was strong in defence. You know, everyone knows that he can attack and everyone knows that he can kick. But those are the two areas where there's been, you know, rightly question marks about him for the last, you know, sort of 6-7 years. And I think the fact that he sort of stepped up and did that just sort of kind of cut any of that, any sort of like negative media about him sort of off.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. He probably does have the best narrative available of the 15 options. I suppose Elliot Daly's narrative could be quite good, but 15 to be out of position. So, yeah, if you're picking purely on narrative, it's probably Hoggy.
Hogg's done two tours, never had the test spot. You know, he's got to get the test spot for his third tour, because he's probably not going to make the next one. I know he's, what, 29?
29, yeah.
But potentially, maybe with his style of game, maybe getting to the next lines at 33 is a bit of a push.
That's probably true. I suppose, yeah, there's a real redemption from getting that sort of freak elbow in the eye in New Zealand from Connor Murray to then sort of, you know, returning. Oh, lovely stuff. Well, Hoggy's had a good start. Finn, he's like, from a guy who's obviously usually the center of attention, I suppose perhaps you could call his performance a little bit quiet against the Lions early in the week.
Yeah, probably. But I didn't mind that, actually. I thought he's tried things, but I think he tried things when they were on. It was almost like the right decision, just maybe the execution wasn't that great. And I think he did a few sort of slightly wilder looking things, but under penalty advantage.
I think the only time I thought, oh God, was when he threw that pass, that slightly off pass sort of underneath their own sticks, essentially.
Yeah.
Which didn't really go to hand. And yeah,
I think we had an advantage then, a Lions advantage. But anyway, I think overall he's not been trying to force it too much. And I think that he's done a pretty good job so far playing within the system that Gatland and Townsend, et cetera, want to play. It must have been difficult for him lining up with, well, on his left, Ali Price, or, you know, on his inside, Ali Price, who he's very comfortable with, but Owen Farrell, who he obviously hasn't played with and is a very different player to him. And I actually thought that the combination in bits against the Sigma Lions, there were some like quite nice little signs of potential, but overall probably didn't quite work. So I think that slightly takes the shine off his performance, but I think overall he was solid. I don't think he sort of did too much wrong. It's maybe just not quite clicking for him yet. But I just think the games themselves have sort of become increasingly disjointed. And sometimes for the guys at sort of 9 or 10 to have that much control for a full 80 has been quite difficult.
Yeah, I think even, you know, last night when Finn came on, you know, clearly it was sort of getting to the end of the game and there were sort of changes happening, but it was just so disjointed. It was, you know, pretty hard for him to sort of take any sort of level of control over the last sort of 15, 20 minutes. And I actually thought he sort of didn't have particularly great time on the pitch. But no, I think, I guess the difficulty with Finn is, I think Bigger just isn't that hot seat. And unless Bigger has a real sort of dud of a performance, it just feels like ultimately Bigger's going to have that starting spot. And then Farrell gives you, again, sort of more options on the bench. So more likely to bring him on because he can cover sort of 10 and 12. Whereas whilst obviously Finn has played 12 previously, you know, really, I think there's the only chance of him playing for the Lions is going to be in that 10 jersey.
Yeah.
So he starts or he doesn't play.
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit of the Watson about him where it's either you start or you're not in the 23.
Which is annoying as well, because I think Farrell was a bit better last night, but I still don't think he's played as well as Bigger or Finn. And it's probably actually made more mistakes than Finn, but I can see the reasoning for him being selected with his goal kicking and you know, experience of having been there and done it before.
It was interesting, sort of, because Farrell was kicking ahead of Finn. I wonder if I wonder what the decision process was for that. I wonder if they just look at like their percentages over the last sort of 2 years, or whether there is some sort of conversation in training about who's gonna kick.
Yeah, that would be quite an interesting conversation if it was between Finn and Farrell. So I can see sort of both of them putting their foot down.
Yeah, I guess the issue with Finn is he doesn't, because I actually think Finn's kicking from the tee is underrated, but one of his issues as well is he doesn't kick at club level.
Yeah.
But yeah, I imagine they both probably wanted to kick, and well, I guess Farrell.
I reckon Farrell would just make a bigger deal of it, and Finn would just be like, all right, fuck it, if you want it. If you want it that bad.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, just here for a good time, lads.
Yeah, a quick Google shows that in 2020, so names needs to be updated, but at the international level, Finn's goal kicking was 81%.
And Farrell, not great Farrell, for an international.
But Farrell's was only 79.
Oh, get it up, you Faz.
And Greg Laidlaw was 84. Come on.
Bring in the special teams. Good bit of half-assed sort of internet research there. Enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, the source is just a kind of generic website called Ruck. So,
well, I think if our brand is anything, it is half-assed internet research. I think that's very much what we're trying to aim for. Well, from one person that you think is either going to start or not, to one guy that's maybe sort of looking like he's got a very good chance, Rory Sutherland is looking to the Manor Born, to Lions Rugby. Looks fit as hell. He's really abrasive and looks to be sort of in with a shout for a test jersey. What do you reckon, Alan?
I never like to make real definitive calls when it comes to loose head props.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have read some commentary about how Mako's struggling and how. And to be fair, Wynne Jones doesn't seem to have done too much on the tour, and Rory's, you know, been strong in the scrum and had his little run in the loose yesterday. So it feels like there's a chance. But look, I think it's I don't know. I can't bring too much insight into the old loose head competition. I think.
I think that there's not many players. There's hardly any players who might have played themselves out of the test already. But I, in my view, Mako Vunipola might have played himself out on the back of yesterday, just because the scrum was all over the shop and it did seem to mainly be down to him. And I think you can. I thought he was okay in the loose, but he's always going to be good in the loose. It's the scrummaging that's maybe the concern with him.
I was worried whether Xander was going to get any sort of heat for the scrum yesterday.
But then you looked at. Well, the scrum penalties that I saw that the Lions conceded were basically all when Vunipola basically fell on his face. And if you looked at the other side of the scrum, you know, maybe Xander wasn't getting the upper hand on his opposite man, but he was still in a decent enough position. He was still on his feet, at least. I think maybe he did concede one or two penalties.
I guess with anything... Xander's performances have kind of passed without comment, almost in sort of like the not amazing, not terrible sort of bracket. Possibly not a bad place to be two games into the tour, but I think he's done well, but he's not sort of had, I suppose, if you look at Watson, Harris, who will come on to Price, who, you know, we've already talked about, they've sort of really, I guess, stepped up and people have been talking about, yo, yeah, they've really sort of hit the Lions' expectation running. Whereas Xander, I think he's performed well, but he seems to be passing largely without comment in, I guess, the sort of the wider media. I don't know if that's good or a bad thing.
I think there is a sense that three jersey is fairly well sewn up with Furlong and probably a Sinclair who seems to be getting back to a bit of form. So maybe that's the main reason why. I agree. I don't think he's done anything poorly. Maybe against the Sigma Lions, he didn't look that great and he conceded a turnover off one of his carries. But he came on with sort of the last 10 minutes when the game was a bit done and dusted and a bit all over the shop. So it does feel though slightly that that's his big chance, really, this game. And he's not going to get many more chances to stake his claim.
Yeah, there just isn't that many games, and who knows how many of them are going to be cancelled between now and the test series in reality.
Well, even on a normal tour, I think there was only going to be 3 games left.
Yep.
So it's just such a short tour that unless you're sort of coming in as the favourite, or you get, you know, a couple of games, the first kind of maybe the first game and the third game, and you're really sort of red hot, it's really hard to sort of make your way up the ladder, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, I mean, talking of making their way up the ladder, should we talk Doohan? Little hat trick last night. Got one against Japan. I guess it's the only factor is that, you know, Josh Adams is sort of like just about outscoring him whenever they play. But Doohan's certainly putting himself in the conversation for that back three, wouldn't you say, Matt?
Yeah, he's been pretty fast, particularly in attack. He's just shown everyone what particularly Scottish fans knew he could do. He's finished very well, I thought, particularly his second try last night when he got on the end of the final kick and sort of towed it forward to score. Maybe showed a bit more finesse than people expect from him. And just whenever he gets the ball, even if he's not scoring, he's making meters. I still don't think he's actually been used quite enough sort of coming up through the midfield, but yeah, he's taken his chances ball in hand very well. I still think there are, I don't want to focus on that negative too much, but there are still question marks about his defence. I think so far on the tour, definitely before yesterday, he had missed the most tackles at an individual level. He missed 4 tackles in that Japan game alone. And maybe he was at fault for the Sharks try yesterday. I think it was a difficult one where he kind of had to make a decision, and he actually made quite a good tackle, but the guy managed to get it away. But Elliot Daly, who was on his inside, was probably had that man, and he probably could have drifted. And I think that's the only, maybe the major reason that he might not get in the test squad, because someone like Josh Adams, I think, is seen as a very well-rounded player whose defense is good, whose kicking is good, and can play fullback as well. So his positioning sense is very good as well. And once again, Doohan can only play on the wing.
I guess going back to the similar logic that we had with Stuart Hogg, which is everyone knows he can do the attacking stuff. Everyone knows he can do the kicking stuff. It's really the sort of defensive and high balls that he needs to sort of really just kind of prove that he's got that in terms of kind of the style that South Africa will play. I guess with Doohan, everyone kind of knows he can do the attacking stuff. And it's kind of that defensive side that he needs to improve. And it doesn't feel like that has particularly improved since sort of, I guess, the last sort of year or what he's played for Scotland. And I wonder if, to your point, kind of a mix of just that defensive fragility, especially if he's, I don't know, who would he be up against? Probably Mapimpi or Colby.
Colby.
Probably not as strong as the rest of them under the high ball, and then just that ability to really only play the wing. I just wonder whether it just ends up sort of pushing him out of the 23, even though he has been pretty sweet, to be fair, in the 2 games he's played.
I think he'll score in every game he plays on the tour whenever he gets a chance. Like, he might even end up top try scorer. But
I think in these, like, 50-pointers, when it breaks up, it's like, manna from heaven for guys like him and Josh Adams.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, ultimately, I can't believe, I genuinely think there's a good chance that Josh Adams doesn't start, and he's got 8 tries. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see kind of what Watson and Liam Williams are like, because they've just been, you know, clearly they were so strong for Gatland in New Zealand and are both sort of coming in off some pretty like hot form, just haven't had the chance to kind of really do it for the Lions yet.
Yeah, I mean, just a slight segue, but man, imagine being a Worcester Warriors fan right now and seeing like Rory Sutherland, Doohan coming down. You'd be absolutely delighted.
I'd be like, this is great, but it's not what we need. Why have we spent all this money?
They're going to be away on international duty the whole time.
Yeah. It's and Sutherland gets injured quite a lot.
Yeah.
And Doohan, to your point, is when it's like a 50-point game, Doohan is great and loves it. But there has been a lot, especially at club level, there's been a lot of kind of like, of those really tight games against kind of the big opposition where he has gone a little bit missing. And ultimately, Worcester aren't beating anyone by 50 points. Like, it's just how it is. I honestly think they're two of the most like baffling signings.
But Worcester have done that before. Like, they signed Rico Gear and they signed Chris Latham at a time when...
That was wild when they signed Latham.
They didn't need, like, not what they needed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, I mean, fair play. Real, probably both on like minimum 300k, having a real nice life in Worcester. Can't really knock it.
Well, you can't knock it. And also, I guess like the SRU, like I guess the business model of the SRU is right now, like you've got to put your money like quite smart. And if somebody's offering you that much money, because I think like Worcester have bought Rory Sutherland out of his contract as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've taken some cash up front for that. So
like, is that 100%? Because my only thought process was it, potentially Worcester came in for Rory Sutherland, and given that Edinburgh do already have have a bit of depth at Loosehead, and are potentially, you know, the SU in general are under kind of a lot of financial pressure. I wondered whether they were like, you know what, maybe we just get Rory Sutherland off the books, and it gives us a little bit more flexibility around trying to kind of get another back in.
Yeah, maybe, but you tell me Dodson's turning down a sweet transfer fee.
I mean, if it was on offer, I'm assuming Dodson kind of extracted as much value as he could, but
Dodson bought him a house in Worcester.
I just really struggle to believe that Worcester are paying like a 200 grand transfer fee for Rory Sutherland. I just can't, just seems like a very strange thing to do.
Stranger things have happened. But no, good for him, I say.
No,
it's not great for Edinburgh. I think, you know, I think Doohan's probably a bigger loss in terms of sort of strike threat and points added to Edinburgh, because as we say, they're pretty stacked in the front row. But yeah, all the best, Rory.
It's a massive tangent, but it just sort of, this is why I get really confused as to why Aroni Sau has been let go, because... because he's actually playing for Fiji this weekend against New Zealand.
Yeah.
But he was sort of the player who, when Doohan was away, was sort of that wing that could like come off there, come into sort of the midfield and absolutely sort of like smash it up, and was kind of like always making meters. And yeah, Edinburgh got hit rid of him and Doohan, which just sort of leaves the cupboard a little bit bare.
Usually I would be like, there must be something, like he must be like a bad bloke, or you know, there's an issue with him in camp. But he won Players' Player of the Season. Like, everyone's obviously like, Aroni Sau's great. Let's keep this guy. So maybe gone awry.
Or maybe Provence were just like, we're going to double your salary.
There is that. And Provence, I've actually never been, but I know that it's a very nice wine region. So
yeah,
maybe he wants to go and just drink a lot of rosé in Provence.
Going back to Sutherland, sorry, Cockerill said at the end of December that he had, last December, that he had 18 months left in his contract. So that would imply a transfer fee has been paid.
It doesn't. It gives the possibility, but ultimately,
I'm not saying, but it confirms that he had time left in his contract, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, Alan. That's like the most like animated I've heard you on the pod for a wee while. Rory Sutherland's contract terms. Shit, maybe you should be like an agent for these guys.
That would be fairly beast, to be fair. Maybe I could just like one-man band, but only have Chris Dean as my client. So just take him a whole time, just trying to get Chris Dean sort of like minor deals with like Noko.
Chris Dean deserves a payday in the south of France. Get the prince a payday. I think that should be our next big campaign.
I did see that Edinburgh are relaunching their player sponsorships.
We going again?
Well, I feel like we're still owed one.
We never got to go to the dinner.
Yeah. Are we not
Edinburgh Rugby, you have my details. Please get in touch about how that's going to be made up to us.
I know.
I thought it was kind of unspoken agreement that we were the sponsor in sort of perpetuity.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when the Birmingham City like retired Jude Bellingham's jersey? Like they've retired the sponsorship of Chris Dean to us.
Right, it would be if Edinburgh retired the number 12 for Chris Dean when he left.
Had been 21 if you're in the inside centre.
Yeah. That would be absolutely amazing. Well, speaking of centres, there is one Scottish player that we haven't talked about yet as we've gone down our various rabbit holes. Chris Harris started the game against the Sigma Lions. There seems to be some issue with Robbie Henshaw, bit of an injury, bit of something going on there. What have you made of Harris's contributions? Obviously, that first chip kick for the Rhys Dammit try was lovely. Big Al, can you see him troubling a Lions test jersey?
I think he's definitely in the mix. And I think 13 is one of the spots that's most up for grabs. And I for some reason, I keep finding myself thinking in a line with Hugo Monier that Elliot Daly might start at 13, which I know might trigger Matt. But I do think that it's sort of between Harris, Henshaw and Daly, and I think a little bit depending on who plays 10 and 12 and how they want to play and what the sort of composition of that bench is. I do think that it's quite wide open. I do think that Harris did put up his hand pretty well in terms of, you know, not only did he do kind of all the defensive stuff, but he attacked really well. He's clearly the sort of was sort of on page with sort of Finn. And like, I think him and Aki, it's a really solid centre pairing if that's the sort of style you want to go with. And I don't know. I just can't get this idea that Daly is going to start at 13.
You've got a Daly theory that allows a different makeup on the bench, haven't you?
If you have Daly in your team, it allows you to do a 6-2 split. So if Daly starts at 13, it allows you to have, say, Price and Farrell on the bench and gives you six forwards, because Daly can then ultimately then cover 13 through to 15. So that does give you that massive level of flexibility. And also, to be fair to Daly, when he has played for the Lions, he has looked pretty good. On the counter argument is that Daly has looked really terrible for England all year.
And he hasn't played 13 in like 5 years, right?
Yeah, I think he's played a little bit for Saracens in the Championship, hasn't he?
Yeah, but who cares?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but
no, I'm triggered because you've convinced me that it is going to happen, and I'm really pissed off.
Yeah, I know. I could just see a sort of Murray, Bigger, Aki, Daly, sort of 9-13, and then yeah, with Price and Farrell taking up sort of 22 and 23.
So who'd be playing? So 13 for South Africa would be, Or Dale Endy.
And Dale Endy at 12 with Am at 13.
Would they not just like laugh at Elliot Daly and send people down his channel?
Potentially, I guess so. I mean, I guess ultimately that's why you've got Aki in there though, to sort of help out as well. And I guess Dale Endy is more of a sort of crash ball runner than Am.
Yeah.
So you'd probably just try and tell Aki to focus on making sure he kind of gets Dale Andy down, and then just sort of, you know, allow hope that Daly sort of manages to kind of control Am in the wide channels. But no, Luke, I agree. I still think that ultimately Henshaw's got to be.
I think Henshaw, yeah.
It's the favourite, just given how strong his form was for Ireland and also for Leinster. And I think this goes back to your point, you know, we've sort of then shifted away from Harris, but ultimately Harris has definitely only improved his case by how he played against the Lions. I just think it's that number 13 role, I just have zero idea who they're going for. Feels increasingly likely that Aki at 12?
I think Henshaw is guaranteed to start, and I kind of feel like he could play at 12. They could slot him in quite nicely. So I think if they played Daly, then I think you play Henshaw potentially. It's not the most just inspiring of midfields, although Daly on form is quite an exciting player. Let's not talk too much about English players, but
let's keep that to an absolute bare minimum. Well, that is the that's the sort of run through of the state of play of the Lions and how the Scots are getting on the fixtures as they stand. And can't stress enough that the impact that COVID is having on the tour, it's going to be pretty fleet of foot. And hopefully we do get to the test series. The Lions are playing the Sharks again on Saturday evening, then South Africa A middle of next week, and then the Stormers next weekend before the first test on the 24th of July. But there has been some home soil Scottish news, couple of big name departures, obviously Rory Sutherland to Worcester, which we just touched upon in the Lions. But the saga of Hugh Jones has finally come to a conclusion, and it looks like a pretty happy conclusion. Obviously, he was due to be heading to Bayonne in the top 14 in the south of France. They got relegated. He's activated a relegation clause, and he's ended up at Premiership champions Harlequins. Matt, that is a pretty good result for Hugh Jones.
Yeah, I mean, to go from Bayonne, who, even when he was joining them, it wasn't like they were sort of even mid-table in the top 14. They were down at the bottom, struggling, and no one really had heard of them or what they were about. And to now end up at Quinns, who've had this amazing run of form and that incredible win in the Premiership final. And clearly, they've got a new head coach now in Tabai Matson, who is extremely highly rated. The amount of like exciting young players that they've got throughout the squad who are now getting their England caps, like it's clearly a really exciting place to be. And obviously Hugh Jones's style, which is where his strengths are in attack, seemed to fit into that Quinns team and that Quinns style of play like an absolute glove.
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem like a match made in heaven. And I suppose he'll be competing for the 13 jersey. Presumably he's looking to play outside centre with Jordan Turner Hall. How do you reckon he'll get on with that?
With who? Jordan Turner Hall?
Not Jordan Turner Hall, who's in the coaching staff for Harlequins. Who do I mean?
Joe Marchant.
I mean Joe Marchant. Yes. Sorry, I was thinking. Joe Marchant, obviously. How do you think he'll get on with that?
I mean, I think that Marchant's form has been so good in the last 18 months to 2 years, helped out by that stint he had with the Blues in New Zealand, that I think it would be very difficult to displace him. I think that Hugh Jones probably his favourite position is 13, but Quinns have just lost Mike Brown, who's gone to Newcastle. So maybe they're actually thinking of him more as a 15. And then I wouldn't be surprised to see Marchant getting called up to a few England squads. So maybe that's the time for Jones to step up it, you know, providing he's not in the Scotland squad, which I think he's still very much in the selection frame for.
Well, good for Hugh. We will keep a very close eye on that. Another bit of Scottish news, under-20s cap and sevens player Kyle Rhodes has been announced today, heading off to London Irish. Matt, seems like a decent move for him.
It does. It's you know, my initial reaction was, as a guy, I think he's been in the Scotland Sevens squad recently, to go from that to a Premiership contract is absolutely class. And like, however he's swung that, you know, fair play to his agent. And I think that London Irish are a club who, in recent years, they've invested quite a lot in their squad, and they're probably on the up. So it's a good time to be joining them. But the other reaction, I suppose, is why couldn't you get a gig in Scotland? I mean, if you look at maybe Glasgow, their back three options are pretty saturated at the moment. But at Edinburgh, they've just lost Doohan, just lost Sow. And I don't think of really signed that Owlett guy from Bristol, who I'm not convinced by. And you kind of think that it's a young Scottish guy who's clearly shown enough for London Irish to be interested. It's a bit of a shame that he hasn't got a shot for Edinburgh, at least. I think he did actually play at the end of last season, and by all accounts, in a Pro 14 game, actually coming off the bench, and by all accounts did pretty well. So it's a bit strange in that sense.
It is a bit of a funny one, but we will keep a keen eye on him down there. Only 23 years old, so plenty still to come from Kyle Rowe. Finlay Christie, once fated as the great hope of Scottish number nines, changed his Instagram description to a Scotland flag about 6 months ago, getting everybody very, very excited that he was coming north, has now been capped for the All Blacks. So I guess, Alan, as somebody with relatively close ties to New Zealand, how are you feeling about that?
I mean, I think I've seen a few pieces of commentary saying, you know, oh, it's fine, you know, we didn't really need him, our scrum half depth is strong enough. And I think, yes, we do have a lot of depth at scrum half, but ultimately, Finlay Christie would have made that a lot stronger. And I think actually for Scotland in general, it's actually quite a big loss. You know, ultimately, Finlay Christie is the youngest scrum half starting for any of the Super Rugby teams. So, and ultimately, you know, at 25 starting for the Blues and being on the bench for the All Blacks. So you think was he on the bench last week? He's on the bench again this week. Yeah. You know, if he moved to Scotland, it potentially 100% would be at least on the bench. For Scotland, I would think. I don't think he'd be ahead of Price, but he would be on the bench and would bring something a little bit different to that team. So, no, I think it's a bit disappointing, but look, ultimately, clearly, he sort of flirted with it sort of during COVID, moved from to the Blues, and as I said, because he's Aaron Smith's like 32, TJ's about turn 30, there clearly is like a bit of an opportunity to try and kind of be that scrum half for New Zealand, or at least kind of build up quite a lot of kind of game time. So there you go. Fair play to the man. Peebles born, betrayed the land of his birth, but that's fine.
He absolutely has done. He's probably offered like pretty sweet little setup, flat in Stock Bridge by Edinburgh, and then they had to go and get Ben Velikot instead.
Would have been that dream, you know?
It's hard to turn down. I don't know how he's done it.
I know.
Just a little walking weekend in Peebles, go back and see the family home, you know? We'd have had a lovely time.
Peebles Hydro, nice little spa day you could have done. Look, Finlay. You do hate to see someone betraying their motherland like that.
It's no creef though. No creef.
It is the second best Hydro in Scotland, I would have thought. is there any more? I don't know. Let's not go down the Hydro rabbit hole. Next up on the Canter Through the News, let's start with the Scotland national team. The match that they were due to be playing against Romania this weekend. Is it this weekend or next weekend?
This weekend.
It was this weekend. We were meant to be going to Bucharest for my stag do, but had to get moved around. So that's been cancelled because of outbreaks of COVID in the Scotland camp, which also claimed the scalp of the Scotland A game against England. It's a bit of a shame that it looks like, I suppose, the Georgia game's still a little bit of a question mark over it as well. It's a bit of a shame that wider pool of Scotland talent is not going to get a bit of a run out, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I was keen to see the likes of your Rufus McLeans and Ross Thompson getting that run out, because they've very much deserved it, and it feels like that next generation coming through, and even the likes of seeing Rory Hutchinson and Matt Scott and Tupaluto in the centres, for instance, you know, that would have been really exciting. So I don't know, he's kind of got a like spare thought for those guys. It's a real shame. it seems to have kind of just like ripped through so quickly, considering, or it's been pretty virulent, because it seems that there are quite a lot of players unavailable for the game against Scotland, against England A, and then going from, quite quickly it went from being in this training bubble to the whole squad self-isolating, which I haven't really heard too much of that happening too many times over the last year or so, when there have been COVID cases. It seems to be more isolated than that. So yeah, whatever's happened, like, clearly not been under control at all.
Yeah, I guess once it gets into a bubble, it gets into a bubble, and it's pretty difficult to look at. Cases on the up in Tbilisi is my half-arsed internet research into Georgian COVID as well. Is there a second test against South Africa going ahead?
No.
But
that's because
that's South Africa rather than Georgia, yeah. Isn't it?
Georgia had cases as well.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Yeah, you did, yeah. Sir.
It's just everywhere at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. There was kind of chat about the Lions potentially taking over that match, which could have been quite good.
The Lions playing Georgia?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I think now that they got the cases, they've decided to make it the double header v. the Sharks.
The one everyone was asking for.
Yeah.
After like, a seed.
1872 Cup all over again.
Well, that's the thing. Could the Scotland players be like, look, lads, we've done this all year. We've played the same game over and over again forever.
We know how to develop the right mindset for that.
Exactly. And then finally, just on the away from the Scotland national team, we'll wait to hear news on whether that Georgia game does indeed go ahead. But the Scotland under-20s are currently bubbled down in Cardiff, playing their under-20s Six Nations. And... well, it is not going well. They got absolutely humped by Italy. And then they were on the end of what looked to be another pumping yesterday, which was slightly curtailed by France getting a red card. But it does seem that this crop of under-20s is a little bit below par with their, I guess, with their peer group around the Six Nations. Matt, what do you reckon is going on?
Yeah, I was getting a bit suspicious of all the kind of panic around it, and thought we're actually not maybe as bad at under 20 as we think, because if you look at the results last year, when the tournament sort of got like split up because of COVID, but we did okay against Ireland away, only lost by 8 points. We only lost to England at home by 4 points. We beat Italy away. We only lost to France at home by a score. And then if you remember, we absolutely pumped, Wales.
I do. It was the last game of rugby before COVID, wasn't it?
Nathan Chamberlain was threatening to be a kind of exciting running 10 before he missed Edinburgh.
before that was stamped out of him by Edinburgh Rugby. Duncan Hodge was like, you know that stuff you're doing with the under-20s? That will not fly here.
Yeah, exactly. Pack it in. and then I think I was reading that it's a very young under-20s team that we've got this year. So I think like 18 of the 32 in the squad can play next year. And I think you can see that. Like they look, to me, it looks like they're straight out of school by rugby almost. Like they don't look.
Some of the French lads they were playing against were an absolute joke.
But I think they don't look conditioned enough. They don't look, the skill level just doesn't look quite at the races yet. And I think that a bit more sort of higher level rugby under their belts would help in that regard. But yeah, for sure. The results have been really disappointing. I think particularly that under 18, so the Italy game being defeated by that much. And then, you know, Sean Lennon afterwards saying, you know, I don't think we show that we cared enough is a pretty damning assessment. And I think that Italy actually do have an increasingly good record at age group against Scotland. So that, you know, there are definitely some concerns there, but I think it is being slightly overblown, but just watching a bit of the France game yesterday, it was as I say, the conditioning you could tell, you know, it was miles apart, but even the Scottish basic skill levels, the passing in the backs was just putting everyone under so much pressure, so it does feel as if maybe this intake isn't quite as strong as in previous years.
Always nice to see Teddy Leatherbarrow on the team sheet there, and on the score sheet yesterday as well. The Barrow.
What's the older Barrow? Isn't there two barrows?
I think there's only one leather barrow, isn't there?
All right. I just remember there used to be an under 20 leather barrow, but maybe this is the same one. And I just got confused. Or maybe the leather barrow was under
it. Probably not many leather barrows, right?
It's a very famous, Scottish family, the Leather Barrows, obviously. Do you not remember?
I was going to say, I mean, if they're not brothers, it'd be a very strange coincidence.
There is actually an Ollie Leather Barrow as well.
Yeah.
There's a Scott Leather Barrow who plays English Rugby League for Workington Town as well. So maybe, I don't know if anybody knows what sort of legacy the Leather Barrows have got. It's Teddy Leatherbarrow. He's the one from Sale is the one we're talking about, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he scored at the weekend and it's a fucking great name. So well done to you, Teddy. More power to you, son.
Worried about these Italian youngsters coming through. It's been like a couple of good years of under 20s.
Yeah.
Like, quite worrying.
I'm not ready to going back to losing to Italy quite regularly in the Six Nations.
No, not at all.
I'm not ready to go back to those dark places. I'm used to having that sort of slight weekend off of anxiety in the Six Nations.
Benetton winning the Rainbow Cup as well. Signs aren't good.
Well, that's it. Well, we're going to get to see. Imagine that. That's the hottest ticket in town, to see the Rainbow Cup champions in a pre-season fixture for Edinburgh. Can you imagine?
Genuinely,
sign me up.
Yeah. It's going to be, first big match, hopefully, post-COVID, place full, absolute full, pumping. It's going to be unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
To be fair, actually, it might actually be full, to be fair.
They've sold over 3,000 season tickets.
Yeah,
which is almost half capacity.
I know. Could be really good. It does look good, to be fair.
It does look really, really good. And I know we like making fun of Edinburgh Rugby, but yeah, fair play on that. That is quite good. But it's a little bit, like if you're supporting Scottish sport and on the day that Edinburgh, like we've got Benetton coming, Rangers are like, right, we've got Real Madrid. Anyone interested? It's kind of like a different ballpark.
Yeah.
That is fair. But also like Rangers sometimes have like Ross County. So,
they quite regularly have Ross County.
is Ross County that much different from Zebre? From Edinburgh Zebre?
That's what I'm saying. I think regularly Rangers and Edinburgh probably are bringing similar style.
Yeah, it's got a better fixture list. Edinburgh Rangers on a domestic season, probably Edinburgh.
Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely more glamorous.
Yeah, you've got decent European rugby most of the time as well.
Well, that's true.
A lot of the Welsh destinations aren't exactly glamorous. Like, no one's taking their girlfriend on like a long weekend to Newport.
Or Gwent, for that matter.
Don't really understand where either of those places are, really. So
yeah, I know.
let's not get into it.
Sorry, lads.
Do you want to cause any trouble?
I do have a very quick quiz.
Yes, is this the one on the SRU strategy?
It's absolutely not one on the SRU strategy. That would be you couldn't
do a quiz on it because it doesn't say anything.
Exactly. It's like there is actually like no sort of specific content. It's all just sort of like really nice sort of words and phrases.
The whole thing is word soup and like infographics and nice photos of community rugby.
Yeah, I mean, it is really nice, to be fair. It's a nice document. I'm sure, someone had a really nice time putting that together.
Yeah, that's what I like, is that the first meeting Dodson had was with the design department. He's actually bypassed the sort of like business strategy team. He's just like, right, this has got to look great, guys. More pictures is my brief. And then we'll work around that.
But I thought I'd do sort of a very sort of on-brand Lions one. And say, obviously, excluding the 2021 tour, there has been 19 Scotsmen either initially picked the Lions or called up during the Lions in the 21st century. So this is excluding 2021. So you've got Australia 01, New Zealand 05, South Africa 09, Australia 2013, New Zealand 2017. And you've got
19. All right.
Right. Dave, you can go first.
Little known player called Stuart Hogg.
Hoggy. And he's one of three players to have two in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Surely got to go from 2001 onwards, haven't you?
No.
Well,
Tom Smith.
What I like to do is just bank the early ones, Matt.
What did you say, Matt?
Tom Smith.
Tom Smith did have two, but not in the 21st century.
Sorry. I was thinking from 2001. Yeah, it is in the 21st century. He played in 2001.
Yeah, but his second one was in 97.
So he was, for the purposes of the quiz, yes, your answer is correct, Matt.
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
Finn Russell called up in the Geography 6.
Correct.
Gordon Bullock.
Gordon Bullock is one that is correct, and he's had two, both 01 and 2005.
This might work quite well for me if Matt does the oldies, and I just come on, I just focus on the more my short-term memory with Alan Dell, another member of the Geography 6.
Correct.
Scott Murray.
Scott Murray is correct. Absolutely taking down the 01 tour.
Ryan Grant.
Ryan Grant, 2013.
Simon Taylor.
Simon Taylor, 01 tour and 05.
Richie Gray.
Richie Gray, 2013.
Chris Cusseter.
Yeah, 2005.
Ewan Murray.
And Ewan Murray, first 2009.
Mike Blair.
And our second 2009.
That's stuff. Who I had.
We're absolutely cleaning up. I'm going to tell you, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players left.
Nathan Hines.
Nathan Hines is correct. 09.
Ross Ford.
And we've cleaned out 09. Ross Ford is correct.
Have we still got more in 05?
I'll give you... So we've got 1 in 01, 1 in 05, 1 in 2013, and 2 in 2017.
Oh.
Andy Nicol?
Oh, buddy. Andy Nicol, 01. Thank you very much.
How many in 05, sorry?
One in 05, one in 2013, two in 2017.
Oh, that's really annoying. Richie Gray.
Already said.
Oh, did you? Sorry. Sean Maitland.
Sean Maitland is the last 2013.
Nice. So we've got what? One from 05 left?
One from 05 and two from 2017.
Oh, two from 2017.
I've got the 2017. The 05 is killing me.
So, Dave, you've got five seconds to call.
2017 is really fucking annoying me. Greg Laidlaw.
Greg Laidlaw is correct. Matt.
Tommy Seymour.
Tommy Seymour. So we've got 18.
And 05 must have
been. I've got it. I've got it.
First person to call up. First person's call out gets it.
Jason White.
Oh, you heard me say it first.
I think Dave got it.
That is, you heard me say it first. I said it twice. That's
really.
I heard you say Jason, and then
I needed a full name.
Just because you're on first name terms with him doesn't get you anything.
The white was cut out by the shite technology.
Look, take that up with your broadband provider. That's not my issue.
Taking up with Zoom.
Wow, look. Very good. Very, very, very good.
Well, then you can get, seeing as, let's say it's a draw, who's the one Scottish player to have played against the Lions?
Who's Jim Hamilton?
Yeah.
Oh. Who's also played for the Lions?
Well, he's done both. I don't know the answer to that.
Give us a clue.
I think I'm actually lying. I thought it was Alan Dell, but I think I might have just made this up.
That's nonsense. He didn't, did he?
WPNL was on the bench against the Lions.
Yeah.
That's but no, true.
Just let's just ignore it. It's a nice draw. I need to go and have. I've got an aubergine lasagna waiting for me. So.
Oh, the very picture of a modern man. Well, we'll let Alan go and enjoy that. That sounds very, very good. Just before we go, our quick reminder that you can get your copy of This Is Everest. It is the story of the 1997 Lions Tour. It's an absolute belter. on Polaris Publishing. We'll put the link in the show notes to this and check out our social media. We're going to be dropping another little extract from that book onto our newsletter this weekend as well. That's This Is Your Everest, the story of the 1997 Lions Tour on Polaris Publishing. Get it there. Follow us on Twitter. Leave us a review. And we will be back with you soon enough. Thanks a lot.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.